Well, welcome back to Mission, and if this is your first time here, I want to say a special welcome to you. My name is Joel. I'm one of the pastors on staff here at the church, and we've been these last several weeks in a series called In This House, and today is actually part five of that series. So if you've missed some of those messages or you are new, you can catch up on all those online. They're available to watch or listen to, but we've been talking about things that are in the scriptures, in the New Testament, we're to be about as the church. And you might wonder why it's a series called In This House. It's because in the New Testament, the church is talked about like a family. It's language of brothers and sisters, of what we're supposed to be about as God's family, as we're known as God's family. What are we supposed to be about? How are we supposed to treat each other? How are we supposed to live our lives? And so what we've been doing in this series is trying to elevate things that were elevated by Jesus or by the other New Testament writers. They were either elevated or emphasized. And we've looked at some of the things that Jesus elevated, some of his last instructions. Last week, we looked at the very first time the word church is mentioned in the New Testament. Jesus said it in the context of a declaration of Peter. Peter declared that Jesus was the Messiah. This is the first time this had ever been done. And Jesus took that moment, it was an important teaching opportunity. He said, okay, that's a really important statement. He said, what Peter specifically said is, you're the Messiah, you're the Christos. And he used a word they would have all known, that he reached back to the prophets and they would have all known this was the one that was the promised one. The promised one of God who would come and redeem and take away the sins of the world and rescue the people of God. And when Peter said that, Jesus jumped onto it and said, okay, that's important. That idea right there is so important that I'm gonna build my ecclesia, which is the word we translate into church. But what Jesus was saying, I'm gonna build my gathering. I'm gonna build the people that come around and gather around and meet together. I'm gonna build it around that idea because that's the most important idea. And we talked about last week about in terms of the New Testament writers and Jesus, that a lot of what we're to be and do as the church, as the gathering, meeting together, as the body of Christ, we're limited in terms of what we can do in terms of being in rows. That we need to get out of rows and get into circles, and we need to not give up the habit of meeting together. We talked about that a lot last week. But today, I want to continue. I want to pick up right from Peter's confession. As a matter of fact, when Peter proclaimed that, we looked last week at Matthew's account of that. If you don't know, there's four accounts of the life of Jesus, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Today, I want to look over in Luke's account because Luke gives us some details. If you have your Bible, Luke chapter 9. Luke chapter 9, Peter has just proclaimed that Jesus is the Messiah, and Jesus says, on that declaration, I'm gonna build my church. And then what happens next is really interesting because Luke includes some details, and he includes more detail than some of the other writers that wrote accounts of the life of Jesus, these historical accounts of Jesus. And actually, if we're honest, if you've been a Christian for a while, you're familiar with some of these things, and there are things that we're tempted to skip. There are things that honestly aren't amongst the most popular things that Jesus said, but they are amongst the most emphasized because eventually we're gonna land on a verse that's something that all four New Testament writers quoted Jesus as saying. In fact, two of them quoted him saying it multiple times. And it's a hard teaching, it's a difficult one. Right after Peter confessed this, down in Luke chapter 9, verse 21, Jesus strictly warned them not to tell this to anyone yet, I'll just add. Because eventually he would want them to proclaim this to the whole world. But something else had to happen first. And he said this. He said, the Son of Man must suffer many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the teachers of the law. And he must be killed and on the third day be raised to life. Now, for many of us, this isn't new information. This is like historical fact. And we almost get so used to this information. But I want you to just imagine for a moment. You're one of these followers, and you've experienced the thrill of following Jesus. You've watched him put the teachers of the law in their place. You've watched him heal people. You've watched him rescue people. You've seen him proclaim things and give forgiveness and do miracles and feed thousands of people from a kid's lunch and walk on water. And it's like, it's been this thrilling, amazing ride. And Jesus now for the first time is telling you how this is gonna end. How his time on earth is gonna end. And I imagine the followers of Jesus are going, wait, Jesus, that's not how this ends. That's not what we signed up for. We thought we were signing up for the winning team. The Messiah is the one who's supposed to conquer. The Messiah is the one who's supposed to win. And Jesus, when we signed up to follow you, we thought we were signing up with a winner. We don't lose, you win. Come on, that's not how this ends. And then Jesus, after saying this, to his closest followers, he turns to the crowds because lots of people, because of his miracles, have been following. And this is what he said to all of them. Whoever wants to be my disciple, in the midst of the disciples who are questioning, who are concerned about what he's just said, he says to everybody, if you want to be my disciple, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross daily and follow me. This was difficult. This was new. Denying yourself isn't natural. None of us like to deny ourselves. Crosses weren't pretty pieces of jewelry you wore around your neck yet. Crosses were devastating. Crosses were destructive. Crosses were terrifying. And Jesus said, if you're gonna be one of my disciples, you're gonna have to deny yourself and take up your cross. And then this is the statement that's recorded in all the gospels multiple times by two of the gospel writers, that this was a theme that Jesus seemed to emphasize over and over, and it wasn't popular, but this is what Jesus said. He said, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. That is, if you're trying to preserve, if you're trying to be careful, if you're trying to preserve and save your own life, you're gonna lose it. But whoever loses their life for me, for my sake, Matthew says, for my kingdom, they'll save it. Jesus was teaching a principle. And it's a principle that many of us, our parents try to teach us growing up. That to win anything significant, to gain something significant, you have to sacrifice something, you have to give something up. Some of your parents taught you that in painful ways. But some of you really benefited, like when you were in grade school and you were in middle school and you were in high school, your parents would not let you go out and play with your friends and go do other activities until what was done first? Your homework. You do your homework first. And some of you, because you listened to your parents and because you obeyed, guess what? You sacrificed something on the front end, but you got a scholarship to college and the rest of us didn't. You gained something significant. Any athlete that's had any success, the professional athlete, certainly Olympians, they lost something. They could cost them something before they ever won anything. And what they would say is, winning what they won, it was worth it. Some of you, you've experienced this in business. You started a company and you know in the front end, it was costly financially in terms of energy. It was exhausting. Or trying to get that promotion or trying to get that to that place in your career you always wanted to get to. And it was a ton of work. It costs you a lot. But in the end, what you gained was worth it. And what you gained was worth what it costs you. And here's what Jesus is saying. Same principle. That if you want to gain life, if you want to find life, you're gonna have to do it by losing your own life. You're gonna have to give your life away. Here's another way I think Jesus is saying, he said, you find life by giving your life away. That's how you find it. This is a new principle. And I know that you haven't heard this before. And following me has been a lot of fun so far. And we've done all the miracles and we've done all these great things. We've helped a lot of people and we've taught things and we put the religious leaders and other people in their place. And I've always been there. But here's the thing, this is gonna cost you something and it's gonna get more difficult. And then in the rest of chapter 9, there are some really interesting things happen. There are two more miracles. One where Peter, James, and John got to see something nobody else got to see. They saw the glory of God in the face of Jesus. It's known as the transfiguration. And then they come down from the mountain and Jesus casts out a demon. And this drew more people. People heard about these miracles and more crowds came. And you know what Jesus did? He didn't let off the gas. He continued to talk about the cost of following him. And he says, matter of fact, this is the time we're gonna head to Jerusalem. And this is all when it's gonna get really real. And along the way, they stopped at a village and they experienced it firsthand. They were rejected. And James and John, they were notoriously having side conversations. And they had this side conversation. They actually pulled Jesus into this one. Hey, Jesus, come here. Hey, don't you think we should just call down fire from heaven and just destroy these people? And they probably were thinking what we were thinking, like, okay, if they're gonna reject us, we're gonna fight back. And we got Jesus. So if we're fighting back with Jesus, we're in good shape. And Jesus, I imagine, just was like, oh man, we got so much work to do. And he continued to teach. And he continued to press in. And the news was difficult. He said, hey, here's the deal. You're gonna continue to experience things like this. As a matter of fact, as my followers, you're gonna feel like at times you don't really have a home in this world. And you need to not get distracted. If you mean one of my followers, you need to not get distracted by your family. And then he said one of these things, some of you have heard this, Jesus actually said this. He said, you need to let the dead bury the dead, which I'm like, what does that mean? Like, that doesn't sound compassionate. That doesn't sound like we're supposed to do. Jesus said, he was making a point. You need to let the dead bury the dead. And if you look back, you're not fit to follow me. And so there was this hard teaching. Jesus, I think, talking on the extreme, was trying to let them know, hey, you've experienced all the benefits of following me to this point, but there are some costs. It'll be worth it. You're gonna find life, but it's gonna cost you. And then Jesus did almost something that was, it's almost unthinkable. Jesus decided to recruit more help after all of that teaching. He decided to the crowds that he was teaching to, as he was talking about the cost of discipleship, he decided to recruit some more people, and some people stepped up. As a matter of fact, 72 specifically. In Luke chapter 10 and verse 1, it says this: after this teaching, the Lord appointed 72 others and sent them two by two ahead of him to every town and place where he was about to go. To which I think, even after the let the dead bury the dead comment, 72 people were willing to step up. That's pretty good. And 72 people stood up. And this is an interesting note. He sent them to the places he was about to go. To which I wonder, well, if Jesus was about to go there, why is he sending them there? Certainly any teaching or miracles or healing or any ministry that needed to happen, Jesus could do it when he got there. And he could do it better. He didn't need these guys. But we're learning something really important about Jesus. You see, what had happened to this point is these crowds had gathered around. And several of these 72 had just been in the crowds. And what had been happening is they had been watching Jesus do ministry. For some of them, Jesus healed some of their family members. He had been teaching. He had been pouring into them and pouring into their lives. And now Jesus is saying, okay, here's the deal. I have a value. And the value isn't just that you'd come and watch and listen and learn and believe. That's all really valuable. But here's what I want for you. I want to involve you in what I'm doing. See, Jesus was near the end of his earthly ministry, and he was trying to set up a model for what he hoped would happen after he was gone. And here's what I know. I know that Jesus knew there would be more work to do than even they could handle. And here's how I know that is because in the very next verse, look what he tells them. He told them this. He said, the harvest is plentiful. And some of you heard this at missions conference. You heard this in the context of a missions talk. The harvest is plentiful, but the workers are few, which is sort of this agricultural economics lesson. There will be no shortage of supply. There'll be no shortage of demand for what I'm offering. There will only be a shortage of supply in laborers to offer it to people. There's gonna be tremendous demand. There's gonna be a huge harvest, and you're gonna need lots of people, so many so that as you go out, he's talking to the 72, ask the Lord of the harvest, therefore, to send workers into the harvest field. You're gonna have to continually ask the Lord to send more and more and more people to join your team, because here's the thing, is there's gonna be a lot of work to do, and there's a huge harvest. And I'm gonna produce a lot, and you're gonna need help. But here's what I want you to know. I want you to join. I want you to be involved. Jesus had a bigger value. He didn't just want them to watch. He didn't just want them to listen. He didn't want them to learn. He wanted them to experience the thrill of being a part of what he was up to. But before he sent him out, like every great leader, Jesus had his go time speech. It was sort of his pregame speech. Some of you grew up playing sports, and right before you were to go out, you're all prepared, you're trained up, and it's like, okay, here's my last instructions, here's my last words. And Jesus had that locker room pregame speech, and here's how it went. Look to the next verse, chapter 10, verse 3. Go, I am sending you out like lambs among wolves. To which I'm thinking, I don't know that that's ever been quoted in a locker room ever since this time as a pregame speech. But this is Jesus' pregame speech, and he followed that up with don't socialize, and you need to get going because this is urgent, and you need to travel light. Don't take a bunch of stuff with you. He's like, you need to go. There's a lot to be done. And at the end of this whole speech, I imagine, because of all the difficult teaching and because of Jesus' urgency and these difficult words and these, leaving everything behind, I imagine James and John probably had another one of their side conversations. In fact, I don't know if this is true. This is my opinion. I'm reading into the text. But I bet James and John are to the side, and they're probably taking bets. They're wondering what the Vegas line is on how many of the 72 are actually going to follow through on what Jesus has said, because it's going to be hard. If it's the way Jesus said, it's going to be difficult. But look down in verse 17. Look what happens in verse 17. This is what we find out. Luke tells us that the 72 returned after they went out, and they returned with joy. And they said, Lord, even the demons submit to us in your name. I mean, they came back and they were like, you can't imagine what this experience was like. I mean, Jesus, you sent us out, but we've seen you do all these things and all these things that you taught. And we went, and when we did these things in your name, I mean, we saw some of the same things happen that you did. It was unbelievable. I imagine they came back like kids who had just ridden their first roller coaster. Anybody remember that? And they were just like on a high. They were just thrilled. They're like, this was amazing. I mean, you wouldn't believe what happened. And they had all sorts of stories. And this is what their stories were about. Their stories, their joy came from this right here. Jesus, as we poured into others what you poured into us, as we invested, as we just were good stewards, as we took what you poured into us, we poured it into other people. We experienced a joy. We experienced a growth. We experienced a thrill we had never experienced before. And then Jesus turns to his disciples in a private moment. This is what he said. Turned to his disciples and privately he said this, blessed are the eyes that see what you see. Don't miss this. What you're seeing, what you're experiencing, this sort of ministry, he's saying to his top leaders, what you see, don't miss this. For I tell you, many prophets and kings, the smart ones, all these leaders that you look to, they wanted to see what you see, but they did not see it. And they wanted to hear what you hear, but they did not hear it. They waited and they waited and they waited. Here's what I want you to know. I didn't choose the prophets. I didn't choose the kings. I chose you to lead with me and what they wanted to see and what they wanted to hear and what they wanted to be a part of. I've chosen you to lead, to be a part of. Here's what I think. It's what I believe. I believe that Jesus has invited me and that Jesus has invited you in the same way that he invited the 72. I mean, think about that for a minute. This is the way that Jesus designed for faith to be passed along from generation to generation, from one person to the next. That it started with the 72 and him going, you know what? I don't just want you to come and listen and learn and watch. I want you to be a part of what I'm doing. He knew that there would be a faith growth that comes from exercising and pouring out what's poured into you and to other people, watching people be healed, watching people experience hope and experience incredible forgiveness and life because you were simply a good steward of what somebody poured into you. Some of you know this. There's something incredibly life-giving about that. There's something incredibly life-giving about giving your life to something. I mean, we all want to give our lives to something, and we want to give our lives to something that matters. If you didn't know this, you're giving your life to something. We all do. If you're not sure what you're giving your life to, it's really easy. I'll tell you, you can figure it out really, really easily. Just look at your bank accounts. Look at where you spend your time, where your best energy goes, and what you get emotional about, happy, sad, whatever. You figure that out, and you'll discover what you're giving your life to. Here's what Jesus is saying. I'm going to give you the opportunity to give your life to something that will outlive you, and it will be life-giving. And this is what these guys were experiencing. The joy and thrill that they experienced, the life that they were experiencing is exactly what Jesus had just told them a few days earlier, that you're gonna find life by giving your life away. And we see it in the very first group of people that Jesus sends out. And eventually they would continue. After Jesus left, they would pour into a group of other people. And we see throughout the book of Acts, this is exactly what happens. And the church is thriving. There's all sorts of life, people coming to life and faith in Jesus. But not only that, people wanting to be a part of spreading this good news about investing in other people, pouring out what's been poured in them. And the news of Jesus spreads and all these churches begin and this movement grows so fast, extremely fast, it explodes. And it never stopped. It's the biggest, winningest movement ever. Eventually, a guy named Paul came along and Paul began to pour into a guy named Timothy. And he said to Timothy, I need your help. I can't manage all these churches. I can't encourage all these churches. I need you to go around with me. I need you to go around separate of me. And I need you to build into and invest in others. And here's what I want you to do, Timothy. I want you to take what I've poured into you. You can read this about this in 2 Timothy 2. And I want you to pour that into reliable men. What does he mean by reliable men? Here's what I think Paul meant. I want you to pour it into people that will take what was poured into them and pour it into others. This is how Jesus works. He wants to pass what's been poured into you, the faith, the life, the hope that somebody poured into you, that somebody invested in you, and he wants you to hand it off to somebody else. And Paul said to Timothy, I want you to find some reliable people that are willing to do for others what somebody did for them. Now, here's the thing. Some of you sit here today, and the truth is you can think of this person in your life, the person that took what was in their cup and they poured it into you. Some of you, you're sitting next to them. Some of you, they invited you here. Maybe they still attend this church. For others of you, it was in a different season of your life. And as I'm talking right now, this person came to mind, their picture, and you're so grateful. They invited you to something. They invested in you. They sat down and helped you to understand something in the scripture that you couldn't get past. They walked through a difficult season in your life. And the truth is, they didn't have all the answers. They didn't have any special theological training. They weren't some extraordinary person. They were like the 72, a very specific number, but we don't know their names. As almost if to say they were ordinary people that had taken what Jesus had poured into them. And all along the way, people turned from just being a part of the crowd to investing in other people. And that's what somebody did for you. For me, it was a guy named Bill Murtha. And Bill was an ordinary guy. As a matter of fact, Bill's a little bit quirky. And I met Bill first as he became a volunteer in our junior high ministry when I was in junior high. And I was a pastor's kid, so I had no shortage of opportunities to be at church. I was there Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, all the special events. I mean, I was there for everything. I had to go to church all the time. But this guy discovered that there was a gap in my life, and there were some things he saw in my life, and so he tried to connect with me. And one of the things I didn't know about him is that he loved water skiing, and I loved water skiing. I grew up loving water skiing. And so he invited me to go skiing with him one time, and I thought, okay, well, here's this middle-aged guy, and that's sort of weird, but what you know, is that gonna be anything, you know, is that gonna be, what's this experience gonna be like? And I remember when I showed up at the river to meet him, and we were getting ready to put his boat in the water, and he had a Mastercraft ProStar 190. And if you know water skiing, you know that in back in the day, that was the tournament boat. And I was just like, my jaw dropped. I'm like, this is the boat. This is amazing. I mean, I don't know what kind of skier this guy is, but yeah, I can't wait to ski behind this boat. And so we went out that day, and I remember watching this guy tear up the water like crazy. He was so good. And so he instantly had credibility with me, and he used that leverage. Because one of the things Bill would tell you if he was here today is that junior high was a really difficult season for him. It was more awkward than it is for most of us, and junior high was awkward for most of us. And he saw me in a season where he learned a lot, and he went through a really difficult time, didn't have anybody there in his life to breathe life into him and to encourage him. And you know what Bill did? Is he just spent some time with me. And he began investing in me. And we spent a lot of time on the water and off the water. He taught me life skills. He invited me into our home, and I had a great family. But Bill had things in his cup that I needed that somebody else couldn't pour into me. And he just was faithful. He had no theological training. He was no extraordinary person. He just took what was in his cup, realizing he's not responsible for filling up my cup, just for pouring out what's in his cup into my life. And I am so grateful. I stand here today and I think back to that season of my life about how grateful I am for Bill Murtha and the impact and investment that he made in my life. It was a huge deal. Did you know that this church, some of you are these people, week after week, this happens. This is part of what it is to be a part of the body of Christ. This is what it is to be a part of the church. Did you know that in our house, in our church, that week after week after week, people show up, and this is exactly what they do. They pour out what's been poured into them. One of the best parts of my week is receiving emails from those types of people. Now, receiving emails isn't always the best part of my week. There's some of those emails are the worst part of my week. But some of the best part of my week is receiving emails from people in our church. And recently I've gotten some emails. Some people emailed us about their experience in volunteering and serving in some different areas. And I got some of these forwarded to me. I just want to read you just a couple of these real quick. Nicole and Royd Hayes, some of you know them. You know their story. Just recently they were baptized here at Mission. They started coming here a couple of years ago. And they got involved, and they got involved in a small group, in a circle. And they said that was so vital to them feeling a part of the community, but they felt like something was missing. And they would tell you that when they started getting involved serving and pouring out, that it changed the game for them. As a matter of fact, they serve, and here's one of the interesting things. They serve on our parking team, which right now is not the best time to recruit people for the parking team with it being so hot outside. But here's what Nicole said. She wrote us an email. She said, we wanted to help others feel the very same things we felt when we started attending mission. We knew that we'd be helping out. We'd be helping out the church. But what we didn't know was that in helping out, it would increase our own faith. Here, even in the hottest part of summer, even when everything else seems to be dying all around us, I love that, our faith has blossomed. And she told a story about a medical emergency that happened a few weeks ago and the way the body came around and people served this family. She said, you probably think after spending so much time out in the sun and the heat, we'd be miserable. But instead, we have found out that we're always on a constant high and we can't wait for the next opportunity to serve. We love it because of what we experience. Taylor and Jessica Rogo, they're serving in our Created Kids environment. Some of you don't know, we have a Created Kids. It's for kids, serve our families with special needs. And in Created Kids, we have some incredible volunteers that create an environment. And not too long ago, we had some need for some more volunteers. And Jessica responded to an email asking for some volunteers. And she got involved, and this is what she said about her experience. She said, when I first shadowed, which is what you do when you're first getting involved here, you watch somebody else. I first shadowed in the classroom. I was nervous and excited as it was all a bit new to me, but instantly I was blown away by the kids. Created Kids opened my eyes and showed me everything in a new light. These kids see things so differently and show you a whole new appreciation for life moments. She went on to talk about how when they first got here, she was just dating a guy and they got married. Now she had a little more leverage with her husband, Taylor. So she roped him in. She got him involved in Created Kids. And Taylor talks about how important this environment had been to helping him grow in his faith and them growing as a couple. This is what Nicole said. She said, volunteering will continue to be one of the biggest blessings in our lives. And it helps complete the life God planned for Taylor and I and the example we want to set for our children. Some of you know the Ricks family, Olivia Ricks. She's 21 now. She's a product of mission. She grew up in our children's student ministry. And she's decided that she wants to take what somebody invested in her and she wants to invest it in somebody else. So now she leads a group of middle school girls. This is what she says. She said, serving has grown my faith exponentially. Every week, these girls are challenging me with questions about how they should live their lives, with deep questions about God. And because of this, because of their questions, I have been diving deeper into the word to find these answers and seeking God for wisdom on how to answer them. Also, they make me want to live a more God-led life. I'm extremely blessed for serving these girls. Lastly, Teague Miko, she serves on our production team. And you're like, okay, wait, how's that pouring out? Teague's decided to take her gifts and built talents and abilities and pour them out and help to create an environment where lots of people can be invested in. And she says, serving at mission hasn't merely made me grow in my faith. It has reestablished my faith, restored my faith, and enhanced it to new levels I never fully realized. 2 years ago, I had very minimal knowledge of the scriptures. And through the production ministry, my knowledge of the scriptures has grown and multiplied. She talks about all the neat things she's learned in terms of producing a great and excellent environment. She says, I owe serving at mission so much more than enhancing my knowledge of Christ. The scriptures, and expanding my view of Christianity. Serving has taught me joy, humor, acceptance, and the love of being a part of the body. Serving has taught me that by giving back to my community, I am blessed. See, here's what's the common thread in all these stories. It's people who are going, I went thinking I was gonna give and pour out and invest and it was gonna cost me something, but what I gained in return was so much more than I'd given. Some of you experienced this. Some of you experienced it for the first time when you went on a mission trip and you went and you thought, oh, I'm gonna go give and I'm gonna serve. And what you quickly realized is God did something much bigger in your life than he did through your life. And you experienced something extraordinary. So here's the deal. Before we close, I wanna give you an opportunity today to take a step out of the crowd and do what people all along the way have done in the church. It started with the 72, but it's come all the way down to me and to you. And this is the way faith has been passed down. As people in the church, in the church faith community, it's happened since the beginning of the ecclesia. People have taken opportunities to step out of the crowd and to get in the game, to be a part of what God is up to. There's no thrill like it. So here's the deal. I told our staff, hey, I'm gonna be talking about serving. I'm gonna be talking about giving your life away. Do we need help around here? And I started getting emails from my different staff. Oh yeah, we need this number of volunteers. And so I totaled all the emails up and I found out we need 295 new volunteers. And I said, okay, why is this the number? I mean, we really hurting that bad. They're like, no, we're just growing. We've got so many new kids coming and students coming and new families coming and lots of people taking steps to get plugged in, lots of people getting in groups. We need help and we need help to support that. We need people who are willing to come and do just this and pour into other people. So here's the deal. Today, I'd like to give you some more information if you'd like some more information. In the seat back in front of you, I'd like for everybody to pull out a card. There's a card in the seat back in front of you that looks like this. There's a card, and this card is an opportunity for you to get some more information about a way you could get involved in this game to pour out what's been poured into you. And there's five different opportunities. There's five primary areas where we're in need of help. Some of you are going, we need 295 new volunteers. That sounds like a big made-up number. So I'm going to show you where that comes from. We actually need in our children's ministry, you see that there in Mission Kids, we need about 155 new volunteers. Now here's what you need to know. We don't babysit. That's not what we do. We're investing in the next generation. There's nobody babysitting kids back here today. There's no childcare. That's not what we do. We have people who are on mission, moving the mission forward, and they're teaching kids things like God made you. Little kids, I mean, imagine you being the first person to teach a kid, God made you. God loves you. Jesus wants to be your friend forever, trying to help them understand on their level the truths of the scripture. We have volunteers every week who are doing that with our kids, and we have a bunch of new families and kids coming. And we need some of you to come and pour out what's in your cup. Student ministry, we have lots of new students getting connected in our tribes. This week we're starting new tribes, and we need some more help and volunteers. And then here's the thing, we're not just gonna throw you in. We need some help. Some of you, you go, no, junior high school, that was a tough season for me. I made a lot of bad mistakes. Here's what you need to know. Some of our junior hires and high schoolers, they need to hear about your failures. Experience is a great teacher. We want to keep it from being their experience, and you could leverage your experience and your failures to help them grow in their faith. And they need what's in your cup, some of them. They need it poured into their cup. We need some production volunteers. Some of you are behind the scenes people. These next two are for you. Production volunteers that come and help create environments where people's lives can be poured into. We need about 25 new volunteers. Our clean team on Saturdays, we need about 20 new volunteers. I'll just tell you this. These are gonna go quick, but I'll tell you that our clean team, this is a great opportunity. If you wanna serve as a family and you wanna model this for your kids, you can actually, this is one of the few places you can serve all together as a family on the clean team if you wanna show up and serve on the clean team. And then our guest services. We primarily need help in the parking lot. We have lots of guest services opportunities, but primarily we need help in the parking lot. Again, I know it's August. I know you don't recruit volunteers for August, but this isn't a volunteer recruiting push, just so you know. I wanna give you the opportunity to do what people have done all along the way in the faith community, in the church, to find life. And they found life by giving their life away. Now, do we have needs? Yeah, we do. And we actually know that in this service, we need about 100 people based on percentages in this service to jump in and sign up and get some information and jump and get in the game. So here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna lock all the doors until we get the 100 cards. Is that okay? Just kidding, we're not really gonna do that. But we need about 100 of you to step up. And if you're watching online, I'm not gonna give you a pass. I'm gonna make it really easy for you. All you gotta do is send us an email, serving@mission68.org. You give us this same information, name, phone, and email. And you just pick two of these. I'm not just gonna make you pick one. Some of you go, no, I know exactly where I need to be involved. I'm a behind the scenes person, or I need to work with students. But pick your top two, put a one and a two, your preferences. And we're gonna follow up with you. Some of you are worried about that. Some of you have tried to get involved here before, but I'm gonna tell you, it's a new day. I've heard the things in the past about people trying to take a step, but nothing bothers me more when somebody tries to take a step to get involved or get involved serving, and they kind of fall through the cracks. Nobody responds to them. I promise you, I'm gonna give you my word, that will not happen. You're gonna hear from somebody in the next 48 hours, and they're gonna get you the information that you need to get involved. Now, before we close, I just gotta share one more story with you. There's a group of you that are pushing back. You think you're too busy, you're overqualified, you have a lot going on, you don't need to add one more thing to your plate, and if you were to tell your story, you think I would agree. And the group of people are the men, okay? I know because I am one, okay? But here's the thing. We're the last ones to get involved. Last time, a lot of times, and again, this is my experience in church, the women lead the way. They get involved first. Our kids even model the way for us, and we get involved last. Don't let that happen. You need to get involved, and you need to lead the way in your family. And some of you, I just want to take some excuse away. There's a guy who's in our church who's decided, and he's a man's man, he's decided to get involved in a way that some of you would never even dream of getting involved, but he's finding life in an extraordinary way, and I want to share his story with you before we conclude. So take a look.
Every morning, I wake up and get ready for the day. I have a fairly rigid morning routine that helps me mentally prepare for the day ahead. After college, my business degree led me into the field of real estate and finance. One of the things I love most about what I do is that I get to walk people through one of the biggest life decisions they'll ever make, which is investing in a home. Over the past few years, I've built a really great team of amazing people that help me serve our community. But I'm not all about the 9-to-5. I'm also a hunter. I feel like I was made to hunt. Anywhere outdoors, anywhere in nature, that's my zone. I feel most at peace and connected to myself and God when I'm hunting, and with all the noise and the daily distractions gone, I feel like my feet settle in, my mind stops racing, and my eyes truly and finally open. But I don't just work, and I'm not just a hunter. So I've served in various capacities at Mission for a long time, but about a year ago, I felt God calling me to serve in a bigger way here at Mission. I felt a calling to specifically pursue an area that would stretch me and take me out of my comfort zone. When I started thinking about challenging places to serve, I couldn't think of anywhere more terrifying than the 2-year-old's room. And for some reason, it was scarier for me to connect with a single toddler than an entire room full of adults. I know it's crazy, a businessman, a hunter, afraid of being rejected by a 2-year-old, but regardless, I really felt like this was the place God was calling me to serve. The last 8 months of serving our 2-year-olds at Mission has been an unbelievable experience for me. To walk into a room full of 2-year-olds and actually be the adult they reach for is something I would have never expected. And God's really taught me to press into Him, especially in moments I feel weak or inadequate. I think I probably take away more from these experiences than the kids even do. I'm a husband, I'm a leader, I'm a hunter, but most of all, I'm a follower of Jesus, who continually calls me outside of my comfort zone to serve alongside Him. My name is Ben Andrus, and I love serving my church.
I love this. I love what he said. I probably take more away from these experiences than even the kids do. Here's what the business leader, hunter guy, Ben says. Here's the deal. When I started doing this, I experienced something I hadn't experienced before. And I began to sit down and just tell you, Ben's way overqualified to teach 2-year-olds. He's finding life by giving his life away. And most of all, more than anything else, the thing that he's proud of is being a follower of Jesus and following him as he continually calls him out of his comfort zone to serve alongside him. That's what I believe God's doing for some of you today. He's calling you out of your comfort zone. You think, not me. You don't know my story. If you heard my story, I'd be disqualified. No. You're qualified because somebody's invested something in you. And God wants to use your story. He wants to use your experience to invest in somebody else. Here's the thing, to close, we need you. We do. Not because we have 295 slots to fill. I'm not worried about that. God's gonna fill that, he always does. God supplies the resources and the people to build his church. I'm not worried about any of that. Here's why we need you. Don't miss this. This is so important. We need you because this person right here needs you. They do. And they need what's in your cup. And God has invested in you through people, through this place, and all along the way, throughout our faith community. People have stepped out of the crowd and they've poured into people. And this person right here, they need you and they need what's in your cup, yours. You think you're not qualified. You don't think that you have anything to offer. And here's what I'm telling you. The 72, the ordinary people that we don't know their names, they stepped out of the crowd and they experienced the thrill of God using what had been poured into them to be poured into other people. And they experienced life and faith in a way they never had before. So we need you. And we not only need you, we're gonna be with you. We're not gonna just throw you the wolves. Jesus can get away with that. We can't get away with that, okay? Jesus can do that. We're not gonna throw you the wolves. There's two reasons. One, because we can't get away with that. The second reason is because we've worked too hard to build and create what we're doing. We have great children's student programs, great environments around here. We've worked too hard at that. We're not just gonna throw you in and let you mess it up, okay? We're not gonna do that. We're gonna be with you. We're gonna train you. We're gonna let you shadow somebody. We're gonna invest in you. We want you to win. We want you to have a great experience. We have hundreds of volunteers that come week after week, and it's because they're having a great experience and they're having fun. They're finding community. And we're gonna be with you. We need you, we're with you, but this is the most important thing. You need this. You do. You don't realize it. This is the most emotional part for me. You don't realize what God might do in your life by you just choosing to do this, pouring out what's been poured into you. Come on, hear my heart. Hear my heart as your pastor. Come on. This is really truly what's in my heart for you. I don't want something from you. I want something far more for you than I want something from you. And if you're skeptical and you think that's true, don't sign up. Don't sign up in that car today. But you need to go find some place to pour your life out, what God's poured into you, because there's a thrill and a faith growth that comes with taking that step to partner with Jesus as he calls you out of your comfort zone to join his team. We're just simply trying to give you an opportunity to do that. You see, here's what'll happen if you don't. You'll continue to sit here and you'll continue to be invested in and you'll continue to be poured into and you'll watch and you'll learn and you'll grow and eventually you'll be full. And the truth is you'll continue to sit here and you'll stop growing. Your development and your growth will be arrested because you'll be full. And you won't begin to grow again until you create some space and capacity in your life. You see, when you pour out your life, here's what you do. You create more space for God to fill you up. For some of you, you need this to take the next step in your growth and faith with Jesus. I don't want you to miss that. See, in this house, we're gonna find life by giving our lives away. So, a bunch of you already doing it. And I don't wanna miss that opportunity by anybody. This isn't a one-time thing. If you're new, we're gonna give you a pass. If it's your first time here, you don't have to jump in right now, but here's what I want you to know. We're not gonna stop bugging you. We're gonna keep prodding you because we believe in the New Testament that part of what it is to find ultimate life in Jesus is to give your life away and it's gonna cost you something. But what you will gain is far greater than what you will give. I promise, if you don't believe me, you try it out. You try it out. You go ahead and fill this out and get some information and get in the game. And here's what I guarantee you're gonna find is that you're gonna take away far more than you give. It's just the way God works. And it's worked that way since the very beginning. Don't miss this opportunity to pour out what somebody else has poured into you. So let me just ask you, if you're somebody and you're willing today to join our team, there's a bunch of other volunteers here who are ready for you to join our team. They're gonna be excited. They're gonna wanna cheer for you. If you're willing to take that step, will you just hold this piece of paper up real quick so we can celebrate you? You're gonna fill this out and turn it in on your way out. You hold that up. Look at that. Look at all those people. It's awesome. Now we don't even have to lock the doors before we end. Let me pray for you so we conclude and dismiss. God, thank you for your church. Thank you for this church. Thank you for this place. Thank you for this house, this family. God, thank you for all the people who show up here every week and are pouring into our kids and our students and our families. God, I pray today that you would continue to help them find the life you promised would happen, that we would find when we begin to give our lives away. God, I pray for people who are taking a step today. It's people who are nervous, they're scared, they have too much going on, whatever it is. That's their hang up. Pray that they would take a step today, that they would truly have the courage to take a step and get in the game, not because of a sermon, because of a principle that you laid out from the very beginning. It wasn't the most popular, but you emphasized it over, over, and over, that it's gonna cost us something, but we'll find ultimate life as we pour out and we give our lives away. I pray in this house, in this place, we would be known for pouring ourselves out so that others might find life and we may find new abundant life in you. I pray in Jesus' name, amen.